The massive amount of news stories today makes it very difficult to keep up with. An added issue is that many news items are merely false flags or misleading in the details and analysis. My guest tonight is a longtime broadcaster, podcaster, author, writer, and well-known host of View from the Bunker, and most recently Skywatch TV, Derek Gilbert. Stay tuned for that interview next on Soaring Eagle Radio.
Remember that your failure to be informed does not make me a wacko.
The time has come, the walrus said, to talk of other things. Of shoes and ships and sealing wax and cabbages and kings.
My mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do. It's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Nine most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Hello, and welcome to Soaring Eagle Radio. Your host is Mike Spaulding. Get ready to be challenged and encouraged as you consider today's news and Mike's commentary from a biblical perspective. Now, let's join Mike.
Hi, folks. Welcome to Soaring Eagle Radio. I'm your host, Mike Spaulding. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at Soaring Eagle Rad. Of course, you find us on Facebook and on our website. You can listen to every episode, www.soaringeagleradio.com. Derek Gilbert is the general manager and news anchor and sometime host of Skywatch TV, a Christian media ministry, hosts the internet radio show A View from the Bunker, and co-hosts PID Radio, one of the earliest internet-only programs on the web, with his wife, author, and analyst Sharon Gilbert. His secular broadcast career spanned 25 years and included stops at radio stations in Philadelphia, St. Louis, Little Rock, Peoria, and suburban Chicago. Derek's the author of two novels, The God Conspiracy and Iron Dragons, and is a contributing author to God's Ghostbusters and Blood on the Altar. He speaks at Bible prophecy conferences, focusing especially on the prophetic implications of dominion theology and the transhumanist movement. Derek's also a lifelong Cubs fan, which means that this year he's still watching them in August, and is involved with barbershop and gospel quartets. Derek, welcome to the Soaring Eagle Radio Show.
Mike, it's my honor. Thanks for having me.
I had to get that little dig in about the Cubs because.
Well, you know, in the novel The God Conspiracy, I figured that if the Cubs ever actually made it to the World Series, which they haven't done since 1945, thanks right. to Steve Bartman, may we never speak his name. I included that in the novel, and at the time that I wrote it, the Red Sox had not yet had their run of success. So I figured, well, the Red Sox hadn't won since World War One, the Cubs prior to World War One. So we'll make it one of the features in the novel, the Red Sox and the Cubs. And just before Game One, the first pitch at Wrigley Field, a terrorist bomb blows up the outfield.
So I
figured that's probably what would happen if the Cubs actually win the National League pennant in 2015. Look up for our redemption draweth nigh.
Yes, that's right. Well, an interesting tidbit, Kathy and I and our two youngest daughters, we have four grown daughters, but two youngest daughters. The youngest was in high school at the time, but we lived in Chicago when that actually happened. We were watching the game that night. We lived in the southwest suburbs, Plainfield, Joliet area. And so we were rooting for the Cubs, of course, and saw that happen and just could not believe it. And I told Kathy, I said, this is going to go down in history. This will go into Cubs lore. this event right here. So
you and I must have been hearing from the same spirit, because I turned to Sharon and I said, "That's it." I mean, because you remember the Cubs were leading the series.
Yes. Yes.
3-2 at that point, and yep. I said, "That's it. They've just lost the series."
Yes. Yep. That's exactly.
And I think Cub Nation everywhere was the same feeling. It was like, "Oh no." And,
yes, that's right. That's right. Well, Derek, you've been an inspiration to me. Most of my listeners know that Soaring Eagle Radio is a relatively new effort, just a few months old. I've released 10 shows already, and had a wonderful lineup of guests that have agreed to come on, but you are show number 23, so we're making headway, and we have several shows in the bank and ready to release. But you've been doing this for a long, long time. How did you get started in podcasting?
Well, I started in broadcasting in college in 1980, so I've been behind a microphone for a long while, and as my mother is happy to tell anyone who listens, I started talking before I turned 1 year old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I haven't stopped. Sharon and I, after we met, I think along about 2002 or 3, I forget which year now, it might have been 03, I read about something on the internet called National Novel Writing Month. Now, yeah, I guess it was about then. Sharon's been writing for a long time. I had always wanted to try my hand at writing fiction. I was an avid reader, you know, all through, well, up until college, and then somehow time has slipped away. But I still occasionally, you know, read, and I prefer to read science fiction when I can, which has a lot to do with why we talk about the topics that we do on PID Radio, View from the Bunker, and on Skywatch TV. But, you know, we decided to take this challenge for National Novel Writing Month, which was a challenge to write 50,000 words in 30 days.
Oh, wow.
Sharon knocked them out in about 14, 15 days. I only got to 26,000, but was able to complete that novel. The second year, I actually completed the challenge. I actually did 50,000, 60,000 words in 30 days.
Yeah.
And that second novel became The God Conspiracy.
Yeah, okay.
We, at the time, Sharon and I came up with a concept of writing separately, but writing in the same fictional universe, the same fictional world. And we plotted out a concept for a story arc that would stretch from before Christ, you know, and then go through periods of history. And the only constant characters would be the principalities, the powers, the rulers of spiritual, you know, wickedness.
Yes. Yes.
So the cosmic powers over this present darkness, and you know what humans in various eras of history would do to you know, either interact with or try to oppose them. So we had three novels written. Sharon found a publisher, and her first two novels were actually published by this publishing company. They were trying to start a fiction line, and they were in the process of editing The God Conspiracy. And they said to us, you know, you really need to come up with a way to try to market your books. It's like, well, you know, we were both fairly tech savvy. And I had been reading about this new thing called podcasting. This was shortly after, within like 6 months of when Adam Curry and Dave Weiner developed the code, the RSS code for the or the XML code for the RSS feeds that you need for podcasting.
Yes.
And so I said, well, maybe we could try doing that, you know. And so we bought a couple of consumer-grade headset mics, the kind of thing you normally use for online gaming or talking on Skype.
Yep.
And we figured out how to plug them together and get them into a Mac laptop, used GarageBand, and that was our first show. We spent 30 minutes telling people why should buy our books. And at first, because the storyline that we'd created, this universe, we called the Myth Arc. And so it was called Myth Arc Radio.
Yeah.
And very shortly after that, we decided to broaden the scope a little bit, mainly because after we did the first episode, we said, okay, now what are we going to do next week? We just spent half an hour telling people why they should buy our books.
Right.
Well, maybe we should talk about the reason that we write these books.
Yeah.
And so then we said, okay, well, what's going on in the world that we're looking at? And so we talked about prophecy and conspiracy theories. And then, okay, well, maybe we should talk to some guys who are, you know, whose research we've been reading to prepare for these books. So we got on the phone. We started talking to people like Guy Malone, who organized the Ancient of Days UFO Bible Prophecy Conferences down in Roswell, New Mexico, about 10 years ago. Dr. Michael Heiser, who's got a new book coming out that is, I've got a preview copy, and it's amazing, called The Unseen Realm. I highly recommend that. So anyway, people like Stan Dale, and that's how we met Tom Horn. And you know, at the time, Skype was still relatively new, but we didn't have a way to... we weren't even using Skype.
What were you using?
A cordless phone with a plug from Radio Shack that took the audio from the headphone jack of a cordless phone. And because Macs don't take... You know, Macs require a powered line-level input.
Yes,
we didn't
have
a mixer. Ran it through a Sony Handycam and ran the audio from the Sony Handycam out. It was so jury-rigged. It was hysterical. They could sort of hear us on the phone, and we could hear them back through the laptop as we were, you know, as we were running it back out through the video camera. So it was.
That's awesome.
It was crude but effective. So anyway, that started in March of 2005, and we've gone through different periods as we've tried to find the way that we feel like the Lord was leading us to use it. For a while, we were doing a daily 30-minute update, but they always seemed to gravitate, you know, and get longer and longer till we were doing an hour a day. And this was while I was working a full-time job.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, I'd get home at 5:30 or 6, and we'd do another, you know, half hour to an hour of PID radio. And that just became a bit much around other... I mean, we found that basically we had no time to just be married. We kind of scaled back again to once a week. And as we got more into just talking about news and prophecy and doing fewer interviews, you know, I felt like coming up with another program that would specifically focus on being interviews was a good thing. And you know, as with PID radio, then the PID is an acronym for Peering into Darkness. She came up with the title for A View from the Bunker, because we kind of laughingly joke on PID radio about, you know, well, here we are hunkered down in our bunker. You know, it's the split level at the end of the cul-de-sac.
Yes.
Because even though we talk about a lot of dark things, and the guests that I talk to on A View from the Bunker have, I think, some profound things to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the Lord hasn't given us a spirit of fear. We're not, you know, cowering in a cabin out in the woods, hoping that the world just forgets that we exist.
Right.
You know, you run into us at the big box store, and you see us, you know, at our when our daughter was still in school, we were there at all the PTA events and the, you know, marching band. I mean, you know, we're just a normal, I think, relatively normal anyway, a couple that you just run into on the street and think, oh, okay, they look like normal people. But and this was, I think, one of the funniest episodes during that period while we were still living in the St. Louis area. Our daughter, who was, I think, 11 at the time, brought a friend home from middle school and saw this 4-foot by 8-foot erasable whiteboard on the wall of our the wall of our family room downstairs. And on it, we had just been listening to some interviews about the connections in the terror investigations, Operation Green Quest, which was investigating a company in Boston called PTEC that had gotten its hands on the software developed by a company called Innslaw that had been kind of appropriated, stolen by the U.S. Justice Department. What is it called again? It was case management software for law enforcement, Promise, P-R-O-M-I-S, Promise software. Anyway, it's a huge conspiracy, and it ties to all kinds of things. I mean, weapons development. I mean, we're talking weapons of mass destruction development at an Indian reservation in California.
Oh, my.
And, you know, people dying mysteriously and a guy thrown in jail because he knew too much and wouldn't cooperate with the federal government. And an investigative reporter named Danny Casolaro being suicided at a motel in West Virginia. It's all kinds of things, and how that tied into the strange events that happened on 9/11, because the Promise software, which had backdoors built into it for the government to access, was was being used by a number of federal agencies that were, you know, really important on 9/11, like the Federal Aviation Administration. It was really bizarre. So we had this board just covered with names and circles and arrows and lines and people underlined.
Yep.
And my daughter brought this young kid home with her, and he looked at this, took it in for a minute or two, and then he just said, "Your parents are so cool." Like, yeah, and then our daughters, yeah, that's their wall of paranoia. So, yeah. But the thing is, you know, and we've used that term in jest, and mm-hmm. some people have taken offense at that. But the point is not that we're making light of these things. We know that there is an army of darkness, if you will, that is aligned against us. Intelligent, sentient evil, call them fallen angels, watchers, demons, whatever you want to call them, or perhaps all of those titles are accurate for various ranks of supernatural entities that want to do us harm. But they do exist. They are evil, and they want to destroy us. But as the Apostle John wrote, you know, greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world.
Amen.
So, you know, we laugh a lot. And again, there are some people who are very conspiratorial minded who take offense at that because they assume we're clowns, not taking it seriously.
Well, I take it seriously, but I still have a sense of humor. So, well, I'm wondering, Derek, with all of this going on, View from the Bunker, PID Radio, and I know you do a Sunday webcast, and that's normally live, right? Gilbert House Fellowship?
Well, it was, but when we moved out here to the country and we discovered very quickly that this satellite internet doesn't work well with Skype, we decided that just wasn't going to work anymore. We found this to be true with other live casts that we've done, because periodically we'll get motivated and we'll set a schedule and we'll keep to the schedule for a few months and do live webcasts through Blog Talk Radio or something. Mm-hmm. But we find that the number of people who listen to the archive programs usually outnumber the people who are listening live by about 20 to 1.
So, oh, wow. Well, there you have it. That makes sense then. So are you going to continue and just record them then?
That's what we've been doing for the last 3 months. We've been recording them and uploading them at about the same time. And while we miss the interaction with people in the chat room live, between 50 and 100 people on a Sunday morning, and that's a good-sized congregation. I mean, I think most of the churches in the area we're here, you know, around us right now are about that size or smaller. So I'm not making light of the number of people who are gracious enough to give up an hour of their Sunday morning to join us. But just because of the technical issues, we just thought, well, okay, we'll post it and you know, pray that people care enough to download the archives. That's really been a blessing, that Sunday morning Bible study. There's a lot more in there when you really start digging in than you realize.
Yeah. Well, I'm one of those folks that downloads them and listens to them later, because as you know, I'm a pastor, so I'm busy myself on Sunday mornings.
Yes, sir.
So I'm wondering how all that's going to continue, because you and Sharon have transitioned to Missouri, and you're involved with Skywatch TV now, and that is a huge undertaking. And so I'm wondering if you'll tell our listeners about Skywatch. For those that are not familiar, I'm sure that folks who will listen to this we'll see that it's Derek, and so they'll know about Skywatch TV. But for listeners that are not familiar, could you walk us through Skywatch from when it was just an idea and you started talking and thinking about it, and how did you decide how it was going to look? Because it has gotten ramped up pretty fast from my perspective, Derek.
Well, I mentioned Tom Horn earlier, and really this has been a vision of Tom's for quite some time, and we're just honored and blessed to be a part of it. Tom has some really good ideas about what he wanted to see in a Christian media ministry. And just to give a little background on Tom, he was an Assemblies of God pastor for quite a while. Eventually got to a point where he decided that, you know, he needed to do something else. Got to a point in his life where he and Nita decided that they wanted to retire and didn't want to do it in Oregon because it's taxes are ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, they looked around. They knew some folks out this way, and they came out to southwest Missouri here in the Ozarks and found it a beautiful country. The real estate is very affordable. The people are awfully friendly, and the tax burden is light. So,
excellent.
They found a property here, bought it, and Tom said his goal, he'll tell you, his goal was to put up a fence around the property, let loose the dogs, and just relax. He got bored after about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And he saw some things out there that needed to be addressed that nobody was really addressing. He was early in speaking out about the transhumanist movement.
Mm-hmm.
He was early on speaking out about the Dominionist movement. He saw that coming back in the 90s. And in fact, he gave a speech about it at the National Religious Broadcasters meeting. He was one of the, if not the keynote speaker, he was one of the main speakers, and he never got invited back.
I was going to say, that didn't go over well, I don't imagine.
It did not. It did not. But anyway, he began publishing books here in the Ozarks. He'd wanted to do something a little bit different from what is being done out there. I mean, there are there's a lot of great preaching available on the television. There's some televangelists who, I don't respect quite as much, but trying to give the benefit of the doubt, I'll assume that that folks that are into television ministry for the most part are following the lead that the Lord is setting for them, following the direction that the Lord has given them through the Holy Spirit. And Tom wanted to take the messages that he's been putting out in books about aspects of prophecy that aren't being covered, the occult realm and how the illumined elite want to direct humanity's future, and how that might affect our understanding of Bible prophecy.
Yes.
Not that we're giving any credence to what, say, you know, the Freemasons think about the direction of mankind, it helps to understand what they think, so that we understand how to refute it.
Yes,
and so that we can also talk to our friends and family members and colleagues at work when we encounter these messages, so that we're prepared.
Yeah,
so things aren't sneaking up on us. He had been talking for a while, unbeknownst to me, to some other folks. At about the time, I was really beginning to feel like I needed to devote more time to what Sharon and I were doing through a PID radio and A View from the Bunker, because even though I had was working for a great company, and I'll never say anything bad about the company that I left, family-owned steel distributor based out of Birmingham, Alabama, wonderful people, treated us extremely well, really respected the people I worked for, but it just felt like there was another direction that I was supposed to go. And so after the Pikes Peak Prophecy Summit last year, and again, through knowing Tom and then having been introduced by Tom to Bob Ulrich and Gary Stearman at, formerly of Prophecy in the News, now at Prophecy Watchers,
yes.
Sharon and I had been invited to 4 or 5 prophecy conferences in a row. I had the opportunity to speak, meet other people, interview lots of people, which was really a blessing because I just have a curious mind. I want to find out, well, what do you know? You know, how does this work?
Yeah.
And so for me, this was like a kid in a candy store. 18 interviews in 2 days, no problem. So after the summit last year in Pikes Peak, I came back and I just really felt unsettled, you know, just antsy. Like I'm supposed to be doing something else and I can't do it because I'm doing this thing for this employer. And so Sharon finally one day said to me, you know, call some brothers in the Lord who can give you advice and counsel and do it before I punch you, because I was driving her crazy. And she was right to say that, because I was really difficult to live with for a while there. And so I called a couple of people, including Tom Horn. And unbeknownst to me at that time, he was trying to, you know, figure out how to get the pieces in place for what is now Skywatch TV. And so later in the year, he invited Sharon and me down to the Ozarks from Illinois So that Sharon would be interviewed as one of the first guests on Skywatch TV. Gary Stearman conducted the interview, talked about Sharon's book, Ebola and the Fourth Horseman of the Apocalypse. And while we were here, they said, you know, what would you think about coming down here to work with us and do this, this, and this? Like, oh. So we prayed about it, and it just really felt right. I mean, we'd known Tom by this point for about 10 years, and we had seen what Tom has done with an idea that many people might have said coming in, oh, this is pie in the sky. This will never. But having known Tom and seen what he has built and the team that he's got, which is incredibly, mainly his family, his kids and their spouses, and they're all incredible. And a diverse array of talents that all complement one another. And even though they're all working together, they still get along, which is amazing. Yeah. It's really an amazing family. So we're just, again, blessed to be a part of this. So my responsibilities coming in were to and are to host the daily news updates. This past week, we announced that because Prophecy Watchers, the new ministry Gary Stearman and Bob Ulrich started, has taken off so quickly, that Gary is going to focus on Prophecy Watchers, and I will be taking over, well, effective immediately, as the host of Skywatch TV. So 5 days a week hosting daily updates, plus the weekly program, which is a 30-minute program. And then Sharon is also contributing. She's also a part of this. She does most of the graphics, much of the graphic work that you see on SkywatchTV.com and in the Skywatch TV store. And she, as studio space is constructed, will begin hosting a women's program. The best way to describe it would be a Christian version of The View.
Excellent.
But she also comes in, and in fact, we had a blast today because we did the first of what's going to be a regular weekly feature that we'll call Sci Friday.
I like it.
I mean, you know, here I am. I'm married to a woman who is a published author of some wonderful fiction, and she's got an incredible mind for science, graduated with a degree with honors in molecular biology with an emphasis on genetics. My father told me more than once as he got to know Sharon, son, you married up. So, yeah. And he was absolutely right. So today we just had a blast, and that'll be a weekly feature. So, you know, above and beyond being able to do what I wanted to do since I was a kid, which was talking to a microphone about stuff that I like to talk about, that I think is really interesting. Now I'm doing it for a higher calling, because not only is it interesting, but I think it's important, and I get to do it with this great family and my best friend and the love of my life. I mean, it's Mike, there are days I just wake up and pinch myself. Like, this is,
yeah.
What's the other shoe drop? Because nobody deserves to be this blessed.
Yeah. Yeah. Just doesn't get any better than that.
It certainly doesn't.
Yeah. The SkywatchTV.com is the website, SkywatchTV.com. You can go there, and I'm there, three, four times a week, just checking out what's new. I've subscribed to the email updates. I get those. And listeners, you can do that as well. There is dozens, in a week's time, dozens of very interesting articles that come out. In fact, I find a lot of my research and a lot of my information that I use in writing and sermons comes off of reports from Skywatch. So keep up that good work, Derek. I appreciate it very much.
Well, a lot of that is Tom. I mean, Tom posts most of those stories to the website. Occasionally, I'll pitch something in on the Twitter feed, which also cross-posts to our Facebook page. But the stuff that goes up on the website, you know, Tom handles that. I mean, that's something he feels led to do. And, like, okay, fine. I mean, hey, as far as I'm concerned, that's a lot of my show prep as well. So
sure, yeah, exactly. Well, and he does a great job, because I really appreciate it. There are three or four sites that I subscribe to and really spend some time looking over for new information, and Skywatch TV is one of them. So how can listeners support the work of Skywatch? I know that you're still in a building mode, and so there's a lot of needs. How can they support that?
Well, there's a link on the website, of course, to donate. And Skywatch TV is a 501c3 tax exempt organization, so donations are tax deductible. And I know we've had some folks question that and say, well, you know, do you really want government getting its hooks in what you can say, what you can do. And if that ever gets to a point where the government says you can't say that because you're a 501c3, I think I know Tom well enough to say that he would just politely advise them where they could take their tax documents and place them.
Yeah.
Because the reason that he did it mainly was that there are some media outlets, some broadcast outlets that would not carry any televised program from a Christian organization that was not a tax-exempt 501c3. I guess that's how they weed out, ministries that are less well-run, perhaps. I don't know. Yeah. But anyway, that's the reason for it. But there's a button on the top menu bar at skywatchtv.com. And generally, every month, Tom will come up with something where, you know, for a donation of $10 or more or $20 or more, he'll send back a book that's usually worth at least as much, if not more, than the donation.
Yeah.
In fact, we had to, you know, kind of say, Tom, you know, the folks in the business office, it's costing us more in postage in these than we're taking in. He's like, well, you know, it'll work out. Trust me, it'll work out. And so that is one way. You know, linking to the website, linking to the things that we do, subscribing to the YouTube channel. Everything that we produce for video gets posted to the YouTube channel. And there's a link to that at the website as well. So, again, you don't need to go hunting through YouTube. Just go to skywatchtv.com and look for the YouTube link. So, you know, just getting the word out, because it's not so much about us. It's about the information. You know, again, there are very few Christian ministries out there that are talking about the kinds of things that that we do and that you're doing, Mike. And so that's why we appreciate the opportunity to talk with you and include you in our circle of friends and co-workers in this mission field here. One of the things that really opened my eyes and helped me to understand why this is important. I mean, I mentioned before, I'm a fan of science fiction, have been since I was a kid. So I've always gravitated toward, and had the Holy Spirit not got a hold of me, you know, I could see myself very easily in the transhumanist movement, in the transhumanist camp, believing that someday we would discover how to create heaven in a silicon chip. You know, we would create the Matrix, except we'd make it better, and that's where we would spend the rest of our lives, because Gene Roddenberry said it, and so I believe it. The fact is that according to research that I believe, I think these are polls that were done, statistically significant samples, good methodology. In 2012, the National Geographic Channel did a survey for the launch of a program. It was doing one of those UFO chaser shows that showed that about 36% of American adults believe that we're being visited by ET on a regular basis. And that 70 or 72% of Americans believe there's evidence that aliens have visited the Earth.
That's pretty strong.
Yeah, but 35-36% believe we are currently being visited now, and the government's covering it up because they don't want us to know. Mm-hmm. Now, at the same time, I kind of keep an eye on research that's published by the Barna Group. George Barna heads a research group that keeps tabs on what Americans believe, specifically what Christian Americans believe.
Yes.
And he, about every 5-6 years, will repeat a survey on trying to determine what percentage of Americans have a biblical worldview. And for this survey, he defines a biblical worldview as someone who holds to, I think, 6 key points of doctrine that should all be no-brainers for Christians. Like, you have to agree with these statements. Jesus lived a sinless life, was born of a virgin. Satan is a literal entity or force, not just a concept. You know, things like that. The Bible is the word of God, and God is still – things that should be no-brainer. And he found that only 9% of American adults have a biblical worldview. That means 4 times more Americans believe in ET than in the God of the Bible.
That's alarming.
And even more disturbing is that of people surveyed by Barna who described themselves as born-again Christians, only 19% of them had a biblical worldview.
Yeah.
So they called themselves born-again, but they really didn't know, they really don't know what that term means. So. Yeah. That's why we do what we do. I mean, there are people who will say, well, this is ridiculous. This is science fiction stuff that nobody really believes that. No, if you go out into the real world and look around,
yes,
people are more likely to believe in ET than in Yahweh.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
we got, And probably a lot of some of those people are sitting in the pews on Sunday mornings.
Yep, that's exactly right. Well, I think that's a good segue into the topic of transhumanism. Derek, I know that that's a particular interest of yours. One of the things that that I've noticed is that transhumanism, it has a distinct religious flavor to it. And I know that you've had, I forget the gentleman's name now, but you had I think he was the president of the Mormon Transhumanist Association. I think
Lincoln Cannon is his name.
Yes, Lincoln Cannon.
Very intelligent gentleman, very nice man.
And then recently you had another gentleman, and I want to say that he was maybe Lutheran, and he's part of the Christian transhumanist.
Presbyterian,
okay.
Yeah, Reverend Dr. Christopher Benick.
That's it.
First Presbyterian in, I believe, Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Yeah. So let's explore that subject a little bit, Derek. Transhumanism, for our listeners that might not know what that is, could you give us a definition?
Sure. Transhumanism is a belief that humanity will overcome the limits of our biology and eventually attain immortality through technology. They want to, I kind of described it flippantly, you know, heaven on a silicon chip, but there are some who actually believe that that's the direction it's going to go in one way or another. That we are destined, not only destined, but we have a moral obligation, a moral imperative to try to preserve or protect the long-term survival of the human race through technology that makes us omnipotent as quickly as possible. And omnipotent is the word used by Zoltan Ishvan, the author of a book called The Transhumanist Wager. It's fiction, but it's like Atlas Shrugged for transhumanists. And people will see more of him, I'm sure, because he's running for president now on the Transhumanist Party ticket, which, you know, how's that for a campaign slogan? Want to live forever? Vote for Zoltan. But again, he is a very nice guy, loves his wife, loves his children. He's a rational thinker, but he makes one key error, which many in the transhumanist movement do, which is that he does not believe that God exists.
Right.
Now, if you start from that presumption, the goals of the transhumanists make perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to die.
Right.
And so because they don't believe that there's a God who will preserve their spirit for eternity or will resurrect them into a glorified body at some future date, their goals make perfect sense,
mm-hmm.
to try to develop technology to live as long as possible, preferably eternally, as soon as they possibly can. The danger is that the real hardcore believers – and this is the attitude taken by the protagonist of Zoltan Ishvan's novel, is that if you are trying to oppose me in my goal to attain omnipotence, then you are in effect condemning me to death, and I don't believe I should have to die.
Mm.
So therefore, I have the right to defend myself by any means necessary, or to eliminate your opposition by any means necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So now, most transhumanists believe that that's kind of over the top. They don't really want to kill anyone who stands in their way of becoming immortal. But I think there's some real problems with taking a fallen, corrupted, basically selfish being, namely humans,
mm-hmm.
and making us immortal and possibly omnipotent at the same time. That, to me, sounds like the definition of living in hell.
Right. Yeah.
So, but you're absolutely right, Mike. It is an alternate religion. And again, it's when you start describing it to people. In fact, I talked to, bless them, my mother's retirement community here near us in the Ozarks had me come out and speak to them yesterday morning. And I don't know what they expected. They were sitting there. And actually, it went very well. I think they got it. They understood the concept. When I held up my cell phone and said, how many of you have grandchildren that you've never seen without one of these in their hands? And about half of them raised their hands. Yes, they're always on that. Well, the fact is, only 9% of American adults have a biblical worldview, but their kids, our grandkids, have one of those devices in their hands 100% of the time, and they see the miracles of technology.
Yes,
and the growth in the capabilities of technology every single day.
Yeah.
Now, somebody like Dr. Raymond Kurzweil,
mm-hmm.
very famously has predicted that we will achieve immortality through through technology by the year 2045, 30 years from now. In fact, there's a group out of Russia financed by a Russian billionaire called the 2045 Initiative that, you know, their name is not an accident. They took that prediction, said, oh, that sounds good, 2045 Initiative. By 2020, they want to start having lifelike avatars that we can begin to control with our minds. Ultimately, they want us to be totally free of our bodies and in these immortal avatars. In what? In, you know, in what substrate do we operate? The Matrix, I guess. But
is that
Raker?
Derek is
Raker.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Is that similar? That remind me of something that Carl Tykrib was talking about some type of virtual reality that is going on right now. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, there's a program called Second Life.
That's it.
Yeah, and actually, it's kind of old technology. I was just reading an article today about how that's outmoded. A lot of universities and businesses set up a presence in Second Life back around 2008, 2009, when it was still kind of a new thing. And in fact, there's an article that was just published this week of somebody who went back and was visiting all these abandoned virtual college campuses that were set up by learning institutions that were trying to be on the cutting edge of technology. But the graphics are dated, you know, it's like, you know, old Nintendo, you know, Nintendo games like two generations back.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not really.
So what you're talking about here is much more advanced.
We're talking about, yes, an actual upload of your consciousness into a computer, into an artificial mind. There is research being conducted into artificial intelligence to try to create a simulacrum of the human brain. The thing that's really odd about this is that the guys who are doing this research will admit that the neural networks that they program it, and they train basically by feeding input into these neural networks and then seeing what output they get. And if the output isn't what they wanted, they will tweak some things, reprogram it, change the input or whatever until they start getting the output they want from the inputs that they've thrown into these neural networks. The thing that they will admit is that they don't really know what's going on inside those black boxes.
That's scary. You know?
Yeah. Sharon, in one of her presentations a year ago, found a cartoon that described it perfectly. You've got a pair of scientists looking at a chalkboard, and you've got this one half of the chalkboard, the left-hand side, is just full of complex mathematical computations and equations and symbols that I don't even know what they mean. And then on the right-hand side is an answer. But in the middle of the chalkboard is circled and in big letters is written, "Miracle happens here." And the one scientist is saying to the other, "I think you need to work on your formula a bit, Carl."
And
that's kind of the way these artificial intelligence researchers are approaching the problem. They really don't know what's going on inside that neural network, the black box. Input here, black box in the middle, miracle happens here. And then out the other side is output. And they're trying to make those black boxes, those neural networks, simulate the human brain so that somehow then once they get a replica of the human mind, they can figure out how to map the neurons, the electrical connections inside the mind, and then copy that into an artificial construct. Mm. Now, there are those who think that the people doing this research are really optimistic about their chances, that the human mind is far more complicated than the researchers admit, but it's not stopping them any. And again, if you start with a presumption that 100% of humans from the beginning of time have died, mortality for humans over a long enough timeline, mortality is 100%. And you don't believe that there's anything after that final breath, then throwing every effort you can muster into defeating death makes perfect sense. But it is, in that regard, it is thus a religion. Now, some will admit it, people like Lincoln Cannon, Reverend Benick. There are the Christian Transhumanist Association is fairly small. The Mormon Transhumanist Association has been around a little while longer. And for Mormons, it actually makes sense because their theology, even though they don't really talk about it much because they're trying to mainstream the faith and be considered another Christian denomination, which they are not, they teach that the ultimate goal for the Mormon is apotheosis, to become a god.
Yes.
That Yahweh was once a man like us and who lived a good enough life and became god of his own planet. That is their goal. As Christians, we know that that is heresy. That is not, I mean, you know, that is not what happens to us after we die.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. So what do you think, how is this going to play into technocracy and the rise of technocrats? Well, if you're familiar with Pat Wood's work on technocracy, it seems like this would be a good fit for control and for exploitation. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that.
My take on it is this. I gave a presentation a few years ago on the links between Facebook and the security national security apparatus. Early investors in Facebook were people with a lot of connections to the intelligence community. And there are those in the IC who say that Facebook has managed to do in 10 years what the CIA has not been able to do in 65, which is to get American citizens, well, citizens all over the world, to voluntarily give up all sorts of private information about us and our friends and families, our beliefs, our likes, our dislikes, our social networks. As I began looking at it and we began looking into the transhumanist movement, it dawned on Sharon and me that big data, which is where all of this is going. And by the way, just to say parenthetically, the NSA was supposedly building this center, the Utah Data Center out in the desert of Utah, that was going to be able to store all this information about all of us. When I looked at how much information that Utah Data Center could actually hold compared to how much data we generate as human beings, digital information, it's a drop in the bucket. The NSA, yeah, I mean, there are analysts at the NSA who said the big problem with what we're doing right now is like trying to drink from a fire hose. They can't, they've got so much information coming in, they can't make sense of it. But big data, in my opinion, is besides the obvious value to a future one world government, I don't think that's takes much imagination to figure out how the Antichrist will be able to use Facebook and Twitter and everything else that we give up to keep complete tabs on everybody.
Yeah.
But more than that, I think this is information that's being gathered and collected by companies like Facebook and Google and other big data because they want to use it to program a simulated reality into which they can upload and then live forever.
Wow.
I think, you know, and I don't have any hard evidence to prove that, but it seems to me that that's the only logical reason for wanting, I mean, because the big tech companies like Google and Twitter and Amazon, they went to Congress to protest when the revelations about the National Security Agency started coming out. And Congress started making noise about scaling back the NSA, which, of course, has not happened.
Right.
But the companies like Amazon and Microsoft and Yahoo and Google and so forth went to Congress and said, yes, all of this data collection is bad. It's bad, bad, bad. You should stop it, except for the that we're doing.
Right.
And when coming back to Dr. Ray Kurzweil, and the research that is being done at Google has literally spent billions of dollars, that's billions with a B, acquiring companies that are involved in deep learning research, which is neural network artificial intelligence research, and robotics. They've also got a division that markets its services to store genetic information for researchers. So they're involved in all of these technologies, which just happen to be the technologies that Tom Horn has been talking about for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Genetics, robotics, artificial intelligence, nanotechnology. And that investment, those heavy investments in all of these technologies related to the transhumanist movement, began at the same time that they hired Google hired a new director of engineering, who just happens to be Dr. Ray Kurzweil, the guy who says we're going to achieve immortality in 30 years.
Yes.
So we've got the largest, most powerful technology company on the planet, a company with, you know, that is so big that the National Security Agency turned to Google for help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To deal with Chinese hackers, okay?
Yeah.
That is run by guys who believe that they are going to usher mankind into a new era to move us further down the evolutionary scale toward immortality. And again, most of the American public, most of the world is just oblivious.
Yeah. Why is that, do you think, Derek? Because that was going to be my next question. Tom's been talking about this for years. Many others have. You trumpet it every day. There are other folks that are talking about this. Carl Dykrup's done a lot of research. Pat Wood, you know, name people that we know. Why isn't, and let me even focus this in more. Why aren't Christians paying attention to this? What's your answer?
Well, I think there are a number of reasons, but basically what it comes down to is this. People don't think much about stuff that's really important.
That reminds me of Neil Postman's prophecy about amusing ourselves to death.
We are too busy paying attention to what our idols in the sports world or the entertainment world are doing.
Yep.
We don't want to think about theology because it's hard and it can be uncomfortable. You know, as we mentioned earlier, you know, only and not even 20% of the people who think that they're born again Christians really understand Christian doctrine.
And
I think it's because it requires actual effort. It requires actual thought. And most of us, frankly, just would rather cruise through life and not have to think that much. And it's sad because these are things that have eternal consequences.
Yeah.
And as a parent, I mean, this is really, you know, the board to the side of my head, the spiritual board to the side of my head was a day that as a single dad, there was a brief period there before Sharon and I met where I was primary caregiver, primary custodial parent for our daughter. And I realized one day with a shock that I couldn't explain to my daughter why certain things were right and wrong because I didn't know why I believed what I believed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that moment that, you know, so look, if you're going to be a father to your daughter, you need to do some work and figure out why you believe what you believe. But I get it. You know, families are so stressed today financially. You've got both parents working, struggling. You get home, you're tired. It's your brain is sore. You've been fighting with coworkers and idiot customers or whatever, you know, just. And by the time you get home, you barely have anything left to give to your spouse or your children. And I think that's ultimately what it comes down to it, though. I mean, at least that's what it was for me. This is the realization. If I wanted to be any kind of a father at all, I needed to figure out why I believed what I believed. And that led to all these other conversations. Well, how do I know the Bible is true? How do I what are these critics saying about it? And how do I know whether what they're saying is true?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it all kind of followed from there.
Yeah. And one of the other things that I think contributes to that, too, Derek, is that there's just a general lack of discernment today. People don't know what they believe or even why they should believe what they're being taught at church. They're very easily led astray. There's a myriad of false teachings out there today, and I know that you've done a lot of work on a few of those, one being dominion theology. And as I think about dominion theology, I see some areas where it is very complementary with transhumanism in that it's seeking to dominate, to take over, and to make a right environment in order for Christ to come back. Do you see any connections between or any future opportunities between dominion theologians and transhumanists?
Well, I've been thinking about that. And, you know, to be honest with you, I've not seen much of a push in that direction from those in the dominionist camp because they believe that they're supernaturally going to be given the abilities that the transhumanists want to create through technology.
Yeah.
At its most extreme, dominion theology teaches that Jesus is stuck in heaven at the right hand of the Father until his enemies are made a footstool underneath his feet. That we humans lost dominion over the planet in when Adam and Eve were tricked out of dominion by Satan in the garden, and that we now have to reclaim dominion over all of creation. And that means all of the spheres of influence or mountains of influence. There's a teaching in the dominionist movement called the Seven Mountain Mandate that's fairly popular, and that means we have to take the mountains of arts and entertainment and business and education and family and government and media and some will say military is one of those mountains. But basically all of the facets of human culture, we need to dominate all of those mountains. And once we do that and reclaim the planet for Christ, then he can return because we'll have defeated all of his enemies. Mm-hmm. Well, scripturally, that theology is a mess. You can't support it from scripture. But it's coming out of the charismatic movement where feelings matter more than doctrine anyway.
Yeah.
And because the charismatic movement, at least the apostolic prophetic movement, believes that they're getting new revelation from God, that the apostles in this movement have the New Testament, it doesn't really matter if what's in the Bible doesn't quite square with what the Lord is showing these new apostles today anyway. So I don't know that there's much overlap between the transhumanist movement and the dominionist movement, except for their goal, which is to achieve heaven on earth. And you are right about that. And ironically, it's a lot like the New Age movement. They want to create heaven on earth.
Yes. Yeah. And that's for our listeners that want to do a little bit of research into dominion theology. What are some sources, because I know you've studied this, Derek, what are some sources that they should check out?
There's a new book out, actually two new books by Doug Givitt and Holly Pivek. And Holly's got a website where she blogs a lot about the apostolic prophetic movement called Spirit of Error. And that's at spiritoferror.org. And the names of the books are escaping me at the moment. One I think is called New Apostolic Reformation. And I think the other one is called God's Super Apostles. But if you look for spiritoferror.org, Holly Pivek, that's P-I-V as in Victor, E-C, Doug Givitt, G-E-I-V-E-T-T. Those two books are complementary. They were released at the same time. One is a very scholarly look at the theology behind the New Apostolic Reformation, which is kind of the overarching term for the Dominionist movement. And the other is more of an introductory book for people who are not really familiar with it but like to learn about it. It's a little less... it's a little lighter on the scriptural references and the theological arguments, but both books are excellent. Then there's another older book called, Albert Dagher is the author. The book has been around for a while, and it does a really good job of chronicling the early movement, the early years of the Dominionist movement. Is Vengeance is Ours, I think, The Church in Dominion. I think that's the name of the title, but Albert James Dagher, D-A-G-E-R, is the author of that book. Those are two really good sources that I would recommend. The trouble with the Dominionist movement is that because there's no central office of doctrine, trying to pin them down on exactly what they teach is like trying to nail Jell-O to the wall.
Yeah.
And because they've got all these apostles and prophets who claim to be hearing direct revelation from the throne room of God, and that can change from week to week. What was the other thing that was? There's a book by Hal Lindsey, actually, that I just discovered. In fact, a listener to PID Radio, George Brewer, sent it out. It was published in 1989, so it's been out for a while, 25 years, called The Road to Holocaust.
Yes.
And it in this book, Hal Lindsey is taking apart the Dominionist movement piece by piece and doing an excellent job. And he makes a really good point about Dominion theology. They don't see a role for Israel in God's end times prophecy. It is replacement theology.
Yes.
The church replaces Israel in all of the promises that were made to Israel. And Hal Lindsey has done an excellent job in that book of showing how this could be a theological basis for oppressing the Jews, for Christians to turn on the Jews and say, look, there's no room for you in end times prophecy And especially for the Dominionists who believe that you've got to reclaim the planet for Christ. If the Jews are in the way, well, sorry, you know, God's promises don't apply to you anymore, so off you go.
Yeah.
Get in the train car, you know. Now, I've seen some change in it, and the reason I think this is interesting is I had noticed recently a teaching popping up in the Dominionist movement called One New Man, a phrase that I was seeing appear more and more frequently in recent months. This is based on chapter 2 of the book of Ephesians, where Paul writes to the church at Ephesus about how Jesus has torn down the wall of hostility between Jews and Gentiles, that believers in Christ are no longer Jew nor Gentile, but one new man in Christ. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, that happened at Calvary. That happened at the resurrection.
Yes.
Okay, that's history. But they see this as prophecy, that there's a future date coming where the Jews will be all gathered back in Israel. They will accept Jesus and become one new man, a blended body of believers with the faithful remnant of the church. And that faithful remnant, that one new man, will inherit the land promised to Abraham, which, of course, is kind of problematic because that includes a big chunk of territory now occupied by Muslims.
That's right.
And this is how the Dominionist movement is responding, I think, to what Hal Lindsey pointed out 25 years ago, that, hey, you know, this type of belief system you guys have, your understanding of end times prophecy is wrong, and it's not only wrong, it's dangerous. And they're coming back now and saying, oh, no, one new man, one new man. The reason that we're saying there's no room for Israel, because there won't be an Israel, we'll be one new man in Jesus. No, I'm sorry, Ephesians 2 is history.
Yes.
It is present day. Anyone who accepts Jesus Christ, no longer Jew, no longer Gentile, we are part of this new body of believers, one new man. There was a recent movie that was out last year. A lot of Christians saw it, recommended it, called The Lion, Let the Lion Roar. And
yes.
I've not seen the film, and I really need to see it before I can really speak authoritatively about it. I just read the publicity materials about it, and it claimed to show that there's been a conspiracy that goes back to the days of the Reformers, John Calvin and Martin Luther in particular, who, when they translated the Bible, the New Testament in particular, did so in a way to make the Jews look bad. And it's pretty well documented that Martin Luther, for all of the blessings that he gave the world, was an anti-Semite.
Yes.
No question. Yeah. But the translations that we have of the Bibles, I mean, we have documents that predate Calvin and Luther. I mean, you know, it's not like we're depending on those two guys for our modern English Bible translations.
That's right.
Anyway, but interestingly enough, many of the people who were featured in this film are prominent prophets and apostles in the new apostolic reformation.
Mm.
It's actually a character in the film that, you know, when you look at the internet movie database and look at the list of characters and actors, there's a character in the film named One New Man.
Is that right?
Yeah. So again, I need to see that film because I don't know if they were promoting the idea in that movie. I just thought that is so coincidental, and I'm not much of a coincidence theorist. So.
Yes, that's right.
But yeah. I think that's what's going on. But the thing about Dominion theology is that it appeals to us Christians, especially us conservative Christians who tend to be pretty patriotic Americans.
Mm-hmm.
We love the country, was blessed by God to be a blessing to the world.
Yes.
And of course, the older we get, the more we see that this nation, or at least people who had positions of authority within this nation, have done things in our names that we should be ashamed of.
That's true.
We want to fix things. We see the culture decaying around us, and we want to fix things. And how do we fix it? We go to the polls. We vote. We get the right representatives elected to Congress. We get the right senators. We elect the right president so he can put the right justices on the Supreme Court. And that's how we change things. We, you know, make sure that the laws that we want banning this type of behavior, that type of. Okay, I understand that, and I fell into that behavior about 10 years ago. For a while there, I was a very active, you know, political blogger wannabe, you know.
Yeah.
Wanted to be one of those guys that everybody looked to for, what does he think about this I found after a while, I just don't have the energy for that, because after a while, especially once I realized that I was hearing things from the Republicans that I'd heard from the Democrats before the previous election.
Right.
And I suddenly realized we're living in 1984. We've always been at war with Oceania. But many Christians are involved in political activities. And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, but haven't we heard every 4 years since 1996, which was after Bill Clinton's first term, every 4 years, this is the most important election for Christians in the history of the country?
Yeah, we have.
I mean, every 4 years, we're hearing this now, because if we don't win the presidency this time, we've got these doddering judges on the Supreme Court who are going to retire, and we got to make sure we get our guys in there.
Yeah,
how's that been working out for us? It was the guy George W. Bush appointed, John Roberts, who cast the deciding vote in favor of Obamacare.
That's right.
My point is that we should not be, not that we shouldn't be involved in politics. We should try to live out our faith to the best of our ability in all aspects of life. Just don't trust in politics to save the country, because that ain't going to happen.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Dick. I believe the same thing that you do on that. I saw an article in, I think it was the Boston Globe, not long ago, that and they were bold enough to proclaim, go to the polls, and this is a paraphrase of the headline, go to the polls all you want, but voting is not, let's see, how did they put it, but your vote isn't going to count or something. And the gist of the article was that elections are already predetermined before people go to the polls. And I thought, boy, that is a pessimistic, cynical attitude. But...
Yeah, and the sad thing is that just from a logistical point of view, I've interviewed a woman, and it's been almost 10 years now, but Bev Harris behind blackboxvoting.org.
Yes.
And she's done some amazing research into how easy it is to hack into these voting these days. The point, I think, is that if we devote all of our time into political activism instead of the Great Commission, which is, you know, preaching the good news, the gospel, trying to change hearts.
Yes.
Change hearts through the good news. You know, things aren't going to change, and quite honestly, I think we probably won't see the results that we want anyway. I mean, we're told in prophecy that there will come a great falling away first.
Yes,
and I think that's what we're seeing.
Yeah.
But if we focus on, if we are successful in opposing a political solution on a spiritual problem, all we've done is force unbelievers to adopt our standards of behavior. Right. Their hearts are not changed, and I don't see how that's pleasing to God in any way, shape, or form. Jesus called the Pharisees, who were real good at outward righteousness, he called them whitewashed tombs.
Yes.
So,
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Well, Derek, I think that we're going to have to loop back and do another episode here down the road sometime, because we've still got some topics that we need to cover. And I would love to hear your perspective on those. But in the meantime, where can listeners find you besides View from a Bunker, PDI, Radio, Gilbert House, downloading those? You're on Twitter.
Yeah, and links to all of those will be at our various websites. My personal website is derekpgilbert.com. But if you go to pidradio.com, or skywatchtv.com, you'll find me at one or both of those places. Generally, seeing as how we're posting content almost every single day of the week, it's hard to avoid me.
That's right.
Today the Ozarks, tomorrow Kansas City.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Derek, I appreciate you taking the time to join me on the show today. Thank you very much.
No, thank you. My honor.
Soaring Eagle Radio is a production of Transforming Word Ministries and is released under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. You may subscribe to the show on iTunes, follow us on Facebook where you can discuss this episode, and follow Soaring Eagle Radio on Twitter at Soaring Eagle Rad, and listen to every episode from our website, www.soaringeagleradio.com. The opening audio montage collection was created by Micah 68 Productions. Visit them on the internet at www.mika68.com for more information. Friends, remember the Apostle Paul's admonition to the believers meeting in Rome. Therefore, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship, and do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. I'm your host, Mike Spaulding. Thank you for joining us today for this edition of Soaring Eagle Radio.
Thanks for tuning in today to the Soaring Eagle Radio program. For more information about the show, write us at Soaring Eagle Radio, 682 West Grand Avenue, Lima, Ohio, 45801. You may also contact Mike directly by email at the following address, pastormike@woh.rr.com. God bless you today as you seek Him.